This is Cyber Defense Radio with your host and cybersecurity expert, Gary Malefsky. Gary brings to you another globally recognized cybersecurity executive in the hot seat today.
Sitting in my hot seat today is a very special guest. Returning to the hot seat, it's Dasha Davis. She's the president and founder of Stealth ISS Group, stealth-iss.com. And it's a really cool company. She does cybersecurity consulting. Her team does professional services, managed security services, incident response, and helps folks get compliant with CMMC and beyond. Dasha, welcome back to the hot seat.
Thank you so much for having me, and pleasure to be back.
And you're also a U.S. veteran.
Yes, I am. U.S. Navy.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Yeah, wonderful. So one of the hottest issues, the biggest subjects I'm hearing about, and I think you have a book out on it and another one coming out soon, Beyond Binary, Cybersecurity and AI, your first book. So AI, you know, ChatGPT, it's exploded on the scene. There's a website that has, I think, 800,000 LMMs on it. I forget the name of the site, but it was real popular during Black Hat and DEF CON.
Yep.
Is it just out of control? What do we do?
I think it was, or it, to some extent, it still is a bit out of control. I mean, when ChatGPT was released, there were no guidelines, nothing. And that's when we started identifying, and business owners as well, the risk associated with it. It's out in the cloud. So whatever you put in, it's going to be somewhere. And of course, you probably heard that there's a lot of companies that had personal information and private information in those AIs. So yeah, that triggered me to write this book about, hey, we need to all think about what we're doing here. It's a great tool. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot of opportunities, but there's also risk. And in that book, I described the technology risks of trusting the technology and the vendor, then the whole bias, then the ethical areas around it, and where exactly it's actually being implemented. You know, for example, smart cities, they're starting to control. And if you garbage in, garbage out, and especially for AI or even self-driving automobiles, if there's a flaw in the data, we've got huge problems. And that's really, that book is a non-technical, it just kind of is really for everyone in today's world involved in IT or technology or has an iPhone or anything to kind of have a think about it. Are we really using it properly? Do I know what I'm doing with it? Do I trust the vendor? Do I trust the output? Do I trust the data that goes in? And the good thing is we're starting to get in multiple countries, and the US, of course, as well, to get controls around AI and the standards and what needs to be considered. So I think we're getting into the area where it's not just out of control.
Funny you say that. A taxi in Las Vegas where Black Hat was happening went down the wrong side of the road, went down the wrong lane, and got pulled over by a police officer, and there was no one in the car, no driver, no passenger. And he knocked on the window. The window opened up. It connected to a tech support person remotely who apologized for the flaw in their AI algorithm and said they're working on a patch.
Yep. This was, going down the wrong lane. If it was downtown, not so bad. But if it's the highway, or if it's a red light or a stop sign and you got school kids there, the outcome can be completely different. So, and that's my concern is, are we really knowing what we're into this? Are we really prepared? Are we educated?
Well, one interesting thing is ethics, the compliance, but ethics in AI, ethics in the modeling. And, I believe I've heard that AI hallucinates because it wants to please its masters and give answers, even if it has no data for those answers.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Yeah. I see it happening. But also the problem is, who is behind the data? Who is feeding the data? Is it the right data? And yeah, it can hallucinate for sure. But at the same time, the other component is the quality of the data that you put in. And for example, just like news, you watch Fox, you watch CNN, you get two different angles of it just because they're changing it based on the data that they really want to see and want to relay out. And it's the same with AI. You take a car manufacturer. that has an AI, if you ask that AI which car is the best, well, most likely it's going to be that car manufacturer, and the answer is going to be biased based on who created that AI. So yeah, we have to, and this is one of the things I addressed in the books, is yes, AI will help us a lot in automating things, but the human factor that I believe a lot of people are afraid of, that we get replaced by AI, I don't think so. There still needs to be that human component, the review, the ethical, and the gut feeling that in order to make a proper decision that AI will not have, not for the next 10, 15 years, 20, or ever.
Right on. You know, we do young women in cyber scholarships to help women in, you know, get into the workplace in cyber. And name a time you ever said your mom was wrong. Women's intuition, the gut feeling is so important, and wisdom, mom and dad's wisdom. How do you transfer wisdom and ethics into AI? Can it be done, or do we always have to have human oversight?
I don't know. Honestly, I don't know if we can ever achieve that. I think if you go way into science, the gut feeling kind of comes with gut bacteria and is our second brain. So I'm not sure we can replicate that, but I don't know. But honestly, I don't think we will. And I hope not, because what else are we going to do? You know, we still need AI to help us, and we're still going to be involved. We need to maintain it. We need to manage it. We need to feed it the right data. If it really replaces us 100%, I don't think that's a good idea.
Yeah, we have to be careful. And on being careful, if a software company or major bank is trying to enhance their client offering and they license an AI engine, should they hire you as a consultant to help them figure out ethics and proper regulatory things and making sure the software supply chain to the AI is not getting, the data pools aren't being hacked or manipulated?
Yeah, I think we're seeing a lot of increase from AI companies that are currently developing this, or even purchasing it from a third party or bringing it in-house, that they want to understand what is it, how do we set it up? Just like any application, it still works on infrastructure, it works on systems, it still needs to be tested. Is the data secure? Can it be manipulated? And that's one thing, is data manipulation once it's there. So you need basically a very similar rule of security or set of security controls around it. You need access control, the encryption, you need the monitoring of the data itself, the system itself. And of course, then on top of it, controlling and monitoring the AI, the decision-making process, the analytics. And this is where companies are starting to realize that it's not just about the, okay, is it securely coded? But now it takes it to another level, is the monitoring the AI by itself. Is it actually doing the right actions? So all of this, and then of course the environment, where is it set up? Who all has access? Is it configured? Can it be hacked? Because in this case, we're not talking about simple logs from a server, metadata on what happened, who has logged in. We're talking about data that is being used or will be used to make a decision about medical. Let's say somebody's medicine needs to be, somebody's insulin in a hospital needs to be taken or needs to be injected based on data received. If the data is manipulated or somebody accidentally removed it or something, that's life and death right there. And that's what concerns me.
While poisoning the data lakes, hallucination, we really have to kind of put guardrails and fence in the AI behavior. It should never be able to drive down the wrong side of the road.
It shouldn't. But just like with any technology, it's baby steps. We're all learning. Well, it's going to be improved. But the fact that this was really pretty much released without any warning, without any how to use it and where to use it, and the basic controls, the standards around how to use it, what data it can collect, and the transparency of how it is, how the AI is actually being, how it's processed. I mean, ChatGPT, take a look at it. Do you know really what the algorithm behind is? Do we have the transparency to understand if you type something in that what it spits out is really correct, or where the sources come from, or how old it is unless you actually start digging into it. And that's why I think the transparency will come in really significantly to for us to understand when we're using the technology that the vendors also become transparent. We're using this data, this is the process, this is the manipulation of the data, and this is how the output comes.
Transparency would be wonderful in these tools. I heard Elon Musk was tweeting out something about Google's AI engine where it was asked a question, you know, would it accidentally misgender a person or instead let a nuclear holocaust happen? And it chose to let the nuclear holocaust happen so as not to insult a human being. It's missing Isaac Asimov's three rules of robots, is it not?
Exactly. And that's why I think the human factor in all of this AI, the gut feeling, the ethical judgment, that's what needs to come in. Can we teach AI on ethics? To some extent, yes. But the question is, where has it been done? And this is also where the transparency comes in, is if you're using AI in an environment where ethics and the gut feeling is needed, how much of that has already been implemented? Did the vendor share that with us? Can we really trust it? Or do we just still have to use the AI and then several human beings behind it to validate every single decision before it actually gets rolled out?
Dasha, you've taken this brilliant philosophy into a book that should be out by the time we're on Cyber Defense TV Live. It's cybersecurity. It's not all about technology, and that'll be on Amazon.
Correct. Yes, and honestly, I know this is the second book this year, but I'm getting so frustrated with every time I talk to a business, or a lot of times, not every business, but a lot of times when I talk to business owners, they're like, yeah, we got network security, we got firewall, we're doing vulnerability scanning, we're doing pen testing, we're secure. No, it's more than that. There is the whole compliance piece, there is the risk assessments, even large businesses. Risk assessment is half the time missing. Third-party risks, all of those are missing. And then the fact that they are in an industry where they need to meet certain standards and they're relying on their IT team to understand all those regulatory requirements or their MSPs. And so, and then of course, AI on top of all this. So this book is actually really a guide for CTOs, CISOs, and business owners to understand why security alone, the technology piece, is not good enough, and how to use governance, risk, and compliance to elevate their business into growth, gain customer satisfaction, help their security to really be more secure than what they are with currently just technology. And that, of course, includes people and processes. And then I'm also adding into that the whole AI perspective. And it has checklists, has actually tips, tricks, how to do things. It's not theoretical. It's actually a guidebook that somebody can take and say, okay, I need to do risk assessment. How do I do that? What do I do that? The frequency. And then on top of that, I'm also adding to our website, whoever gets that book gets also a QR code. And there's going to be updated information that they can download at any point in time, templates, things that just get them out of this thinking that it's all about technology. So I'm hoping to make a change here for the industry with some education and some of the tools that they can leverage and just get themselves to a different level.
That sounds great. And I think a lot of us in cybersecurity are geeks and we speak tech talk and acronyms, and boards of directors want to know their level of risk at a moment in time. They want to know if they're in compliance or out of compliance. So GRC should be part of the formula every day. And it is people, process, and technology, but people and process, and where's the data? Who owns the data? Are we in compliance? Today, we might pass an audit, PCI or GLBA or whatever it is, but tomorrow we could be breached. So at any moment in time, we're at risk, aren't we?
Exactly. And honestly, just even maintaining the understanding around regulatory compliance. Just look at US data privacy, 50 different states, 50 different data privacy requirements. And none of us or very limited companies are actually just dealing with local industry or local customers. It's all interconnected. Even if you have a website, and this is one of the things where I see it's almost funny, but not too, well, it's kind of becoming a bit old, where companies telling me here in the US, well, GDPR doesn't apply to us. Well, guess what? You're a hotel and you have a website and you have a reservation, especially here in Vegas. GDPR does not apply to you? No, it applies to you the minute somebody from Europe can access your website and the minute somebody makes a reservation and the minute they show up in your hotel. GDPR applies to you just like everybody else in Europe because you're dealing with European citizens. So that's one thing I'm trying to explain in the book as well and give some tips and tricks, because just because it's Europe doesn't mean it does not apply. Just like California data privacy is relevant to us here in Nevada, it's relevant in Florida, it's relevant in Texas, if we do business with people from those states.
So if we're doing the best we can do, best practices, and we document it for due care and due diligence, if we have a breach, which most companies are breached, they just don't know it. The question is lateral movement and data leakage and data theft. Or, you know, ransomware or leaving behind little time bomb things that cause problems or an outage. We're all at risk. The question is, if we're doing best practices, can we show due care and due diligence to the regulators or to the cyber insurance carriers so that the cost of the breach is a lot less, I would hope.
Yes. And you bring up a really good topic, cyber insurance. I mean, we've all seen it, the prices, it just went, it went crazy. I can understand that because, just like you said, it's not if we get breached, it's when we're going to get breached. So I understand that there is a high insurance cost that the insurances have to cover. But at the same time, I'm also seeing that a lot of companies are struggling to even get insurance because A, it's not affordable, or they just simply get denied because they don't have these controls in place. So now suddenly we're looking at a complete different risk, which are companies that do not have cyber insurance. They cannot pick up the phone and call somebody and have them take care of it and then hopefully get it covered by the insurance companies. So now those companies, and I think there is a good statistics that 70% of those small businesses that get breached cannot recover.
No, I think it's right. And 80% of GDP comes from SMBs, small to medium-sized businesses, yet we're all kind of the soft underbelly with vulnerabilities and exploits happening to us. All it takes is one breach of significance and you're out of business.
Yep. And the hackers, they are not going after the big primes that have the great firewalls and the monitoring and all that. They're going via the small businesses, the ones that they know are not going to have the 24/7 monitoring in place or limited controls. They're using them and then going via the interconnectivity, the supply chain, the printer somewhere else, or the connectivity from one application to another or a network into another company. And they're using that leveraging. So the company itself, even a small company, when they think, well, I'm not important. Absolutely not. You are the biggest risk. You are the biggest target because you're an easy target. And the minute you get breached, you will not be breached for your data. Most likely not. You will be just a stepping stone to somewhere wherever the hackers want to get to, but you will suddenly be in that whole investigation. If somebody will find out that somebody got breached, the forensic analysis, they will identify, well, it came from this IP. Well, small business, you were now involved in a hack.
It's the one to end on the supply chain. It's not just one degree of separation now. It could be anybody in the supply chain that is highly vulnerable. I could get the VPN keys to the castle of a big contractor for the government or someone in manufacturing that's doing something critical. Who knows? Critical infrastructure is under attack. We've seen nation state attacks. Smart cities are under attack. I don't know what to say other than they need you. So you offer your services to SMBs, governments. What's the sweet spot for Stealth ISS?
So our sweet spot is really focusing on identifying the risks that the companies have, identifying the prioritization of it, and focusing on delivering the remediation for them based on the size, the skill set, the technology that they already have. And I can't repeat that more often, but it's people, process, and I call it technology last, because you can only configure a firewall so much. It's the human, the squishy person behind the keyboard, you know, that is the risk. So our goal is really to work with the client to define the custom solutions, but affordable, even for the small business ones, to get them secure, to get them compliant, to figure out, okay, here's where you are. Obviously, it's your baby. You want to stay in business. Here's what we can do for you. Here's what we recommend you do for yourself. Here's the technology you already have. Let's leverage that. Let's fine tune it. Let's not throw it out the trash. If it works, it works. It's just the tuning, the fine tuning, and the knowledge sharing.
That is a great model. And you've got two great books out that folks need to get, Beyond Binary, Cybersecurity and AI. And coming out by the time this is live, Cybersecurity, It's Not All About Technology. Dasha, this is a wonderful hot seat interview. It's great to see you again. Is there anything else you want to cover that we haven't shared with our viewers and listeners?
I just would like to share cybersecurity is not complicated. You just take it as a big elephant. Take it chunk by chunk. I'm available always. We love to share. I personally love to share as well, educate, give insights, and you know, reach out. I'm available on LinkedIn. I've got I've got my calendar on there as well. If you just want to have a chat and kind of get a starting point on how you can secure your business or something that you need, just let me know.
You heard it here first, folks. Dasha Davis is the president and founder of Stealth ISS Group. She's an expert in cybersecurity operations and delivery, a U.S. veteran, honored to be on the show with her live. And she is there with the services you need for GRC compliance and understanding AI and deploying it properly and getting one step ahead of the next threat. Dasha, thank you so much for this hot seat interview.
Thank you so much, Gary. Really appreciate it. It was a pleasure being here again. Hope to see you soon.
Oh, same here. Folks, go to her website, stealth-iss.com.
You've been listening to Cyber Defense Radio. Stay tuned next time for another amazing and informative episode. CyberDefenseRadio.com is proudly part of the Cyber Defense Media Group, where InfoSec knowledge is power.
Cyber Defense TV and Cyber Defense Radio have launched 24/7/365 live streams. Visit them online today at cyberdefense.tv and cyberdefense.radio with your host and globally recognized cybersecurity expert and my good friend, Gary Milewski.